second Frank Rocher's study day on textual linguistics and corpus linguistics, and who invited me there. I am happy, as every time, to be in Prague and among you and you in your institute, which is itself in the Faculty of Mathematics and Physics, Faculty of Mathematics and Physics. But it's, I think it's important for me and for us, because when I was preparing this paper, I reread in parallel some essays on general linguistics by Jacobson, Lucid Linguistics General of Jacobson. One of them, this essay, translated in French as Linguistique et Théorie de la Communication, was published in the volume 1961 of the collection Proceeding of Symposia in Applied Mathematics, entitled The Structure of Language and Its Mathematical Aspects. What I would like to emphasize at that point is that the linguistic models we present and defend, in the manner of Jacobson and therefore of the Prague Circle, is not only linked to human and social sciences, but also to exact sciences. Thus, Jacobson, in his essay on translation, translated by Nicolas Rivet in 1959 as Aspect linguistique de la traduction, quotes not only the German-American anthropologist Franz Boas, but also the Danish physicist Niels Bohr. And I would like to pay tribute again to the lucidity of this essential author of the Prague Circle, because in the same essay on traduction, on translation, he uses Jacobson uses not only the word linguistics. Yes, but I am not.
Oh, you didn't.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I have written on my presentation where you have to change the slide. So, what is very interesting for us in this essay of Jacobson on translation, it's that he uses not only the word linguistics, but the expression language science in the singular, whereas today the word in the expression is usually plural. So I think that intervening in this institute gives us up that linguistics still has a future as a science of erklären, as Wilhelm Dilthey said, explanation, and not only of verstehen, but is to say understanding. The subject I will now deal with belong to both fields or epistemological methods and makes it possible to consider these two approaches to a same linguistic object. So for my introduction, or my first part, I will begin by rereading with you and for you the summary of my presentation, in which I said I will deal with cases that illustrate from textual and referential points of view the linguistic and the ontological versus ontological problem which has been called by French semanticians evolving reference or evolving reference. This historical reminder of landmark will be the subject of my first part, the presentation of the problematic. In the same first part, I will then have to explain myself on various words or expressions specific to this field of research. Firstly, the word cases, that is to say, what cases and why, and secondly, the expression evolving reference or evolving reference that seems to have nothing to do with language, thus with linguistics. I will show it's not the case, of course. The second part of my presentation will focus on the various types of corpora or contexts and the various linguistic solutions we have tried to provide to this issue. These corpora, I call more precisely evolving contexts, include cooking recipes, as well as stories of metamorphosis, and tend to show that there exists a conflict between what we could call two logics. On the one hand, the textual one, in this frame, there are principles of textual organization, or more precisely, textual progression or chain construction and chain preservation. So constraints or principles that are or can be resistant to changes that the text represents. On the other hand, the referential one, second logic, the referential one in our corpora, we can find utterances and texts with changes of denomination in conformity with the physical process as it is represented and recorded by the text. In other words, the nominal change in an evolving context is the counterpart of the ontological one. In other words, the change of denomination respects the physical one. So I will, and now it's my first slide, but I just make some remarks on this slide, which is an historical and epistemological one. So the project of evolving reference started in the years, in the early 90s, and was led by two persons, two scientists. The first one is no more, professor at the Collège de France, Alain Berthaus. And what is interesting is a specialist of physiology of perception and action. And the second one was Mario Borrillo, which is a computer, who is a computer scientist who was in Toulouse, but he collaborated with his wife, André Borrillo, which is a specialist of the interface, syntax, and semantics. In this project, we had a network called Grand Réseau du Grand Est, Great East Network. And this network, which was interdisciplinary, was dominated by linguists. From the free university you can see on the slide, Metz, Nancy, and Strasbourg. And thus, the founding researches on evolving reference were the work of Catherine Schedeker in Metz, who works now with Frédéric, who is a specialist of referential chains. The second person was Michel Charol in Nancy, one of the founders of New Prague Textual Linguistics in France. And the third one, Georges Kleber, who is the emblematic figure of research in referential and lexical semantics in France and beyond since the 80s. The leader of the Grand Great East project was Michel Charol, and they gave, with Catherine Schindecker and Georges Kleber, they gave to the project the name of Anaphora and its treatment, and Frédéric spoke about the associative anaphora, which is the second part, second phase of the project with evolving reference. So one can ask at this point how this linguistic program, which is a textual and semantic, can be part of the global program Cognitions, and the first one of the CNRS. Undoubtedly, by the role that memory plays in this case, on the one hand, short-term memory, or working memory, for the discursive or textual aspect of the problem, and on the other one, long-term or encyclopedic memory for its semantic and lexical aspects. By broadening these last two aspects or phases, semantic and lexical, we see how in a realistic, referentialist linguistic model, the problem can be broadened, especially if we take as an example these cases, metamorphoses. It interests in the background via categorization, ontology, or the classification of species, and via recategorizations, the scale of species. I can now say that the term case, I wanted to explain, and the term case has been borrowed from analytical philosophers who study puzzling cases, that is to say, logical and ontological problems as reflected by language. So the result of this project is a multidisciplinary, the result on this project, of the background, the theoretical background on this project, is a multidisciplinary research in which philosophy or ontology and metaphysics, but also phenomenology, plays a certain role. But linguists have truly given, I show here some publication who appeared in the frame of the project. The first one had an orientation towards linguistics and philosophy, but the former one, this one, 1997, when the other was of 2001, this one is more directly oriented, linguistically oriented. So linguists, like in this book, have truly given this new field of research in language sciences a real linguistic dimension by focusing, on the one hand, on the question of the anaphora and the reference chains, which we find the same thematic or problematic, and on the other hand, on the textual typology, depending on whether the case appears and is studied in, for instance, a mathematical demonstration, that is to say, an explanatory or argumentative text, a cooking recipe, that is to say, an action text, or a metamorphosis tale, that is to say, a narrative text, and fictional too. Finally, linguists, and in particular Michel Charol and Jacques-François Inancy, have focused on the lexicon grammar of what they have called transformative predicates, such as to change into, to transform into, to become into. And at the same time, to the pseudo transformatives as disguise or take the appearance of. My own book appeared in 2001, takes into account this dual dimension of the problem, and in the second part of the book reports on the different linguistic approaches to the issue, referential, thematic, lexical, nominal, verbal, and finally narrative. It allows to study in turn, on the one hand, the role of pronouns in maintaining thematic and therefore referential continuity and the limits of this maintenance, and secondly, the lexical modalities of the change of nominal identification. Third, the role of the intra or extra diegetic point of view in the maintenance of the self. I will give examples now in the second part of my presentation, but if I have time in conclusion, I will present the perspective I pursue today, where I try to bring together, to reunite the dual approaches between text, textual, and referential treatment of the. Evolving context. So for my second part, for the second part of my presentation, demonstrations and case studies. So I started by presenting the theoretical background of problematics of evolving reference as a field of research dealing with notions such as reference and identity. And it happens to be fundamentally philosophical, as I say, but it is in fact a question of reporting first of all, works on philosophy and of language, and then on linguistic works inspired by philosophy of language, like those of Georges Clapet. We know, now my first example, emblematic example from Kafka Metamorphosis, but I have an original text in German, but I have the translation. Oh. Yes, an essay of translation. But if you prefer, we can go back to the original version. But so, what appears in this first example, first evolving context? A certain Gregor Samsa, proper name, is transformed into a monstrous insect. However, it does not change its name immediately after. What can explain this permanence is semantics. That is to say, the semantic and logical model of the proper name, conceived as a rigid designator on the white side, on the one side, and empty of meaning, that is to say, not descriptive, on the other one. This is not only this is not the only possible explanation, as we will see when we discuss the issue from the point of view of the narratives, but it's already an explanation. So now, if you want, you can see that the chain, the chain is not is maintained between Gregor Samsa and he, the pronoun he. I skipped this text because it's too long. If we have time, I can explain something during the discussion. There is, I found on the internet a translation. It's not a good, it's not really a translation, it's more a reformulation, but it's interesting because a poem, it's a poem from Francis Ponge, what is particularly difficult to translate, where we can have, where we can see the difference between a metamorphosis from a caterpillar to a butterfly, and another linguistic procedure, which is in the French text, not really here, a metaphorical one, a metaphorical process, which has, for me, nothing to see with a metamorphic one. I made the difference between metamorphic change and metaphorical change. So, I go to... So that being said, nothing prevents a narrative text from having both modes of designation. In story of metamorphosis such as werewolf stories, we will see now, it's not uncommon for a person before becoming a werewolf to be compared to a wolf, because he or she behaves like a wolf. But behaving like a wolf is not the same thing as being a wolf, in the sense of becoming a wolf. And it is there that narrative fiction is very useful to us, even for the study of non-fictional evolving context. The only way to verify that the metamorphic process is effective is to see it recorded by the text. And the only way to record the process linguistically is to change the noun phrase with a break in the referential chain. We have an example more later. But it can happen, this break can happen, as it may not happen. In most fictional narrative cases, as in Kafka's text, it does not happen. The cases where this occurs are therefore exceptional and as such very interesting for the realistic linguist who are attached to the constraints, physical or phenomenological, as well as our mental or memorial, that wait on the representation of the reference. That is to say, the way they are grasped, in, if one may say, lexically and textually. In the example, in the following example, everything is a question of point of view. Objective and subjective point of view, but in these examples, we deal which also speak of wolves, we will see that the question of the point of view is in fact a question of vision and perception, or even of memory, which is therefore not a point of view in the appreciative sense, purely subjective, as can be a metaphorical distortion, as the one of the in blue here, or as, for instance, the famous Hobbes sentence, man is a wolf to man. So we will work here on two medieval stories, Lays, that tell stories of werewolves. What is going on in these stories? The first thing to say that the metamorphosis into a werewolf is reversible. So the quality of human being is never lost sight of. But at least for the reader or the narrator or for the familiar characters of the man, because he is always a man in the cases we are dealing with, for example, and emblematically, the character is wife. Conversely, for the other characters who do not know the hero and his story and who meet him in animal form, the werewolf is just a wolf. In the previous case, there are several forms of representation of identity after metamorphosis. Excuse me. No. It's for the end. Hold on. In the previous case, The problem now I am dealing with is the manner the story is told. When the narrator is the author, if you want, or the central the hero, the identity doesn't change. If it's the case of the wife, who knows the story, it doesn't change too. But in these stories, you can have we have an example where the hero, which is transformed into a werewolf, meets the king, King Arthur, and the king does not know who is the wolf, and the text say that the king sees a wolf. It's what we can call an opaque context. But the most extraordinary case we can find in these narratives is when the omniscient narrator and therefore the text of the tale register the change of species and so the change of designation. You can, and in this example, it's rare, but we can note that at the same time there is a change of paragraph that visually marks the chain break, even if it may be only temporary. So, for the conclusion, I will develop most of them the perspective of research of this kind of this field of research, and with the following slide. Well, it's not translated because it's very, very hard to be translated, but I can comment it directly without reading my own text. You have here, as I said at the beginning of my exposition, two kind of texts, two genre of texts. Hmm? The first one, what is very interesting here, they come both from the same journal, revue, Cuisine, Even de France. I think it's not necessary to translate. The first one was on paper in 1995. And the second one, I found it on the internet. But what is very interesting in that case, or in that example, is the familiarity between the two texts, as well as they are different in terms of text genre, because the first one is finally a descriptive text. We present what is the rabbit, as a product to be eaten, but it's a rabbit. And the second one is completely different. It's what I call an action text, because it's a cooking recipe. But so in that comparison, what I try to do now in the present state of my research is to combine the two approaches I spoke. The first one is a textual one, and the second one is a referential one. So what we can see here is whether you have a descriptive or an injunctive, a textual one or a referential one, in both cases, you have at the beginning of the text the presentation of an object, a real object, which become, by the organization of the principle of the organization of the text, they become a theme, a textual theme, or more hyper theme. Jean-Michel Adam calls it in French thème-titre, theme titre ou titre theme, thème-titre. So you can you have the presentation of the object as a whole, which becomes from the textual point of view titre theme, and you can see that during the description, the manner of presenting the object in the descriptive text is to aspectualize, says Jean-Michel Adam, that is to divide the object in parts, as well as it happens in the recital. And finally, because it's what involves here, finally, you can see here the rabbit and the rabbit, the same noun, definite noun phrase reappears at the end of the text. So I think that it's a solution to combine and not to divide or to opposite the two kind of treatments, a referential or realistic one, and a linguistic, a truly linguistic one. So for conclusion, I think my conclusion were about the rule of the narrative or the fiction in this field of research, but I only want to say that the model which is defended by Michel Charol, Catherine Schildecker, Georges Kleber, and I, is really a mix between the logical or referential constraints and textual constraints in terms of composition and organization. So, thank you.
Where is she? Oh yeah, over there. How many questions you have now for yourself? I don't want you to say them aloud, but for yourself, how to annotate after having listened to the two talks, how to annotate several of those examples, whether you would, for instance, think it as a chain of the same referent, or whether you would have two referents. So I think there were many interesting questions involved in the examples and in the talk. So thank you both very, very much. I think we still have about 10 minutes for questions. So be it to the first talk or to the second talk. Okay, I will start for the first talk. It's just a comment. It's not a question. It's a comment. You had one of the issues you discussed were the issue of zero subjects. So I just thought about Czech texts. I mean, without annotating zero subjects, you wouldn't get too far. Because you have, in the text, you have so many instances of zero subjects. And that's what we feel is an advantage of our system, that we annotate not the text as it is, but we annotate some deep syntactic structure where the zero subjects don't exist. I mean, we already have a full node, and then we can annotate the chains. So it was one of the issues which occurred to me. By the way, during your talk, I looked at my colleague Jiří Mirovský, because one of our most recent study was a study of referential chains. So we just looked for the density or for the gaps, how long gaps there may be between one mentioning and another mentioning. And we studied this issue in relation to the occurrence of that particular referent in the topic or in the focus of the previous sentence. So that was very interesting to see that you had also this issue in mind. So I just gave you some time to think of questions. Now it's your turn. Yeah, Professor.
One question to Guy Acharbel concerning the story about the werewolf. How should we consider these? It's very interesting, these points of view. When I don't know if I remember it exactly. For example, the king sees a wolf, but another person knows that the werewolf is a man, and he calls him a man. If this is the problem, I think. How do we resolve this? If there are two points of view, two person naming the same referent, is it a coreference change or not?
Thank you.
It's very interesting because we can see in the text combien quand bestes fust muets vers le rouest est venu fuyant. It's always Bicarel, but he was transformed into a beast. And the coreference is always in masculinum. Vers le rouest est venu. The coreference is always with Bicarel in the masculinum coreference. And after it starts with femininum. La bête. So two chains that are different.
Yeah. Well, it's actually very hard to ask a question. I thank you very much for very nice examples, because we also did some annotation of coreference in Czech, and we had very many not similar but cases of such kinds. And what I would like to note about this that these examples are each example is kind of different, so each explanation is kind of different. So we had a task to formally annotate coreference and maybe some bridging relations, so we had to formally differentiate coreference chains from associative anaphora. And then they had a number of in between cases that we had to deal with somehow, and the result is that we had to pose some conventions that in this case we do this and this, and in this case we do this and this. But finally, the convention was for the kind of automatic aims, formal reasons, not to open the reality. So what we came to is actually that reality is individual, And all such cases could be explained somehow, but so it's the explanation is very interesting from the phenomenological point of view, and you get to know a lot about the language, but the answer is still that these chains are just formality, are just conventions. So it's very, very interesting. And what I would like to know is when you planned to make, as one of your aims of the future work, is to make a design of a language model with the help of annotation of coreference chains. And you told a lot about philosophy of language and to the point of view of philosophical analysis of coreference chains. Do you have some easy answers? So something really new that you knew about the language when you look at coreference chains, because this is what we had to deal a lot of. So we had a lot of questions and no answers, actually. Thank you.
Perhaps I can show something. I can close because what I presented is a set of theoretical concerns, and then we spent a lot of time to put them into an annotation manual. So in the manual you can see more concrete cases. And for instance, if you encounter this phenomenon, please annotate like that. If you encounter a bridging anaphora with please do that. And so perhaps it will be an answer to your question. So if I okay. I just try to go to, yeah, okay, so this is a website that that was in my slides, but I show it very quickly. Donc here, there is the annotation manual here, and of course it's written in French, I'm sorry, but it's an example to show you how complex it is to write a manual for the phenomena that are so complex. And the proof, it cannot upload it. In fact, this manual is 30 pages long, and it is full of examples. And for each of them, there is a question, is it this, etc. Okay, it's too long to I don't know, it's a PDF, but, it shows the complexity, exactly. But that is sure that we try to build on some phases of annotation in order to divide the work, first the referring expressions and only them, then the bridging and anaphora and only them. And if an annotator stops at phase two or three, no problem. So no, never mind. Sorry.
So I understand the complexity because we had the same.
Yeah.
But do you plan to, so do you hope to get the real knowledge about the language from this conversation?
Yes, we plan it, but it will be a book, and I think it will be a very long book. It's an ongoing work. In fact, we are writing something like 30 papers on this, on all the facets of the model. And to me, it's impossible to get one easy representation of all the model. There are a lot of aspects, and there is one paper per aspect, of course. And we plan to publish two books. One, but if they are accepted, one on the typologies on coreference chains, with, for instance, a chapter about the influence of a text jaw on the configuration of chain, with another chapter on the influence of the types also of the reference, because the chains are not the same for human beings than for abstract objects. Like, we had a text on le réchauffement climatique, so climate changes, but during the text there was le réchauffement climatique, le réchauffement, les dérèglements climatiques, and three or four kinds of expressions to refer to the same object, but we are not sure of that. So, this is for the first book, and the second we will be on salience. I hope so. So it will be maybe in 2021. So you will have to wait sometimes, but I try to work on it currently. But it's a hard work, of course.
May I briefly answer your question for my part? I can't be satisfied. The first phase of the research is on evolving reference was to gather different type of texts and finally different types of treatments, or dual and opposite. And it's a problem from an epistemological point of view. So I'm not satisfied of this solution. So that's why I try. Well, the problem is now Schneedeker, Charol, Kleber, and so on, the stars of the of this research, that don't work no more on the subject. But the solution I try to find is to find text, real text, like the two last one I presented here, and to find on so different type of text, genre of text, to find a beginning of solution which can explain on a manner more unified the treatment of the problematics. That is to say, in one word, if I can, maybe the way we organize the world in our brain has something to see or to do with the way we organize in our cultural uses the texts.